Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 81 for August 5th, 2024. Telegram-controlled KeyRat attacking Linux systems. DigiCertBook's 83,000 customer certificates. Criminals abusing Cloudflare tunnels again. LinkedIn profiles target workers for information leakage. Welcome back to the show. I am your needy host, Jim Guckin, for my third episode of the third year, but we're hoping to get back into the role of things now that I put them back out every week. Anyway, I'm here to tell you about the news stories that happened this last week that I think you need to pay attention to help protect your infrastructure, your network, your person for the weeks coming forward. The first story that caught my attention this week was about a Telegram-controlled TG-RAT, is what it's called, TG-RAT Trojan, which was originally found back in 2022, which you may go, why are we talking about this, Jim, if it's found, you know, 2 years ago? That was the original version. That was the version that existed back in 2022. It was Windows-based. There's a new modern version of it that's a little more slick from the security perspective, being that now this one targets Linux machines, obviously very different from targeting the Windows machines, targets the Linux machines, and it uses Telegram to be able to get the commands it needs to use as a command and control server, meaning Telegram channels are where it goes to find out what the attacker wants that system to do. Now, it uses the Bash interpreter, the malware that's built into the Linux box, uses that Bash interpreter to get its commands to do whatever evil things it wants to do. But the novel thing here I was seeing is that it uses Telegram, which is that, you know, messaging app that you may or may not be aware of. If you're a cybersecurity person, more than likely you are. There's a lot of hacker groups that exist on there, and that's how you kind of find out what they're doing, what they're taking credit for, how they're working, when new versions of their malware come out. All that exists on Telegram. It's kind of like the dark web 2.0 where you go for this stuff. But this new version of the TG-RAT can download files from Telegram. It can upload files from the host, take screenshots, execute whatever Linux command they can put in there. And the evil thing about this too is because there are individual, like most malware types, there's individual identifiers to these pieces of code that run. They can either control a single machine, use the default Telegram group to control all the machines, or have certain machine IDs join a separate chat in which they will give it the commands. So it's really an interesting kind of way of using command and control. We've seen in the past that there are infrastructures that people build up, where they send the commands for the evil stuff they want to do to the systems, and then have the systems pull that data down and execute those commands. But by using a popular messaging application, there's a little bit of a sinister underground, but on the plus side, it makes it a little easier for us as defenders to find. And as I said, Telegram is not your traditional command and control server or C2 server that you're used to seeing. Usually they build their own infrastructure. There's a website where you can go and grab the data. But the problem with a lot of those versions of it are we can find the infrastructure. The infrastructure is easy to take down because it's centralized on a particular URL, a web host, or a bunch of web hosts in a, you know, usually a bulletproof service provider, meaning someone who's not going to really care about why you're hosting a website with evil stuff on it. But a Telegram server, a communication server, something that was built for the entire purpose of communicating, you may have exceptions for that in your firewall rules already. There may be someone who uses Telegram to talk to clients or something, so forth. I mean, Telegram itself is not just for the bad guys. I mean, everyone in my Telegram groups generally are, but in general, you can have interesting conversations. I've seen sales groups on that platform using it to kind of help sell their wares, or communities come together and speak on Telegram. There's also a part of, you know, sometimes it's hard to track people on Telegram. So it's become this kind of hotbed for communication. So in some systems, yeah, you might have a kind of rule to let people go through to it. Now, on the adverse reaction side of that, how us as defenders can see it is why Bobby may have Telegram on his phone to communicate with someone. Your Linux server that's hosting files is most likely not going to have that same exception. So you can kind of write your hunting queries or your searching or your alerts based on saying, hey, if there's a Linux box and it's talking to Telegram, yeah, it's not legitimate. Let me know so that I can kind of deal with that right away. So in one way, it's a better hidden way of communicating. But for the fact right now, it's just talking to the modern iteration, to say, it's just talking to Linux-based systems. And obviously they want to be able to do evil stuff on it, usually, you know, for monetary gain or, you know, ransomware or what, or steal data. Either way, it's targeting a Linux system that wouldn't necessarily have that kind of communication to a Telegram server. So it's something easier that you can kind of parrot out of your systems to be able to do a good job of finding that traffic and alerting yourself to it and taking the potential steps necessary to fix that. So how do you defend yourself about this particular kind of attack that's going on around now? Well, obviously, you look for Telegram traffic from your Linux servers or any server. I mean, even if they use the older Windows-based version of it, none of your servers should be talking to anything in Telegram. Unless that's somehow how you manage servers, but considering the bad guys are using this, I'm going to guess it's not something that your normal system admin is doing. The other kind of way of dealing with this too is to install an EDR. You know, or a virus or any virus, depending on what your system holds to it. So you install that, you know, the once they get updated kind of ways of measuring that, they'll find the program and be able to kill it. So very easy to deal with, but a very interesting way of how this attack is starting to move along. And the reason I mention this is because one group's using it now. It's only so long before another group comes along and tries the same tactic with other stuff. So be on the lookout for that. For our second story this week, if you are a DigiCert customer, you may not have had a great week. Or if, because I record this on Sunday, you may really be having a bad time today or tomorrow when you go back into your data centers. So if you're not aware, DigiCert is a leading certificate authority. People who are one of the few on the internet who are trusted to generate a security certificate that verifies kind of who you are. They're kind of used a lot on the internet to secure, encrypt connections between the user websites. You know, when you go HTTPS, that's using a certificate. Applications use it. All of this to kind of encapsulate the data to protect someone, you know, from kind of looking at that data if they're able to see it. So if I'm on the same network as you and you're not using a secure methodology, you can kind of sniff that traffic. Certificate authorities is a way of kind of encapsulating that in a secure communication between either user and website or application and website or application and server, stuff like that. So why you may be having a bad time with this. So when you issue certificates, especially on the web, they want to make sure that they issue the certificate, the person who owns that domain. So for example, jimguckin.com has a certificate. I had to prove it was me to be able to kind of, you know, put that on my website and say, yes, this is all stuff on mine. Now, most certificate authorities use a kind of like a random number generator. You put it in the DNS space for your server. You know, that place that, www or blog.jimguckin.com or whatever you want to put in front of it. The thing that holds that, you kind of put a random character in there that they tell you It verifies that I own the domain and I'm asking for the certificate, and then grants it to me. Now, most of these have like a, you know, kind of an underscore for them so that you can kind of not run into namespace that may be really used for something. Now, the likelihood of that actually happening is low, but maybe if you had something that generated a random set of letters and the certificate did, you might run into a case where that works. Very unlikely, but this is the way they do it. So they usually add a underscore in front of it so that it can differentiate this. And that's, they're not, certificate authorities aren't the only ones who do this. There are a lot of other applications that do the underscore in front of it in your DNS name so it knows. So what DigiCert had happened to them is they failed to include the underscore prefix with the random value in some of their validation cases. They were updating the code. They were really just checking, did the process work? Not did it look the way it was supposed to. So they kind of launched this code out there. And they didn't realize what was kind of going on with this until a customer reached out to them. And that's how they found out the issue was. Now, on the plus side, this doesn't really impact a whole lot of customers. And, you know, the intro kind of shocks you and go, well, 83,000 certificates. And that don't get me, that's a lot. But in kind of retrospect, there's only like 6,800 customers who are impacted. 6,807, if you want to be specific at the time this recording was reported. But a number of services was impacted that had the certificate, whether it was the application or so forth, was 83,267. All comes down to 0.4% of the certificates to deal with. Now, some customers, because this was happening for a little while, we don't know exactly when it started, or at least I didn't see a when it started date, kind of asked for a delay in revoking these certificates. And that's what a certificate authority can do. If I'm using my certificate bad or there's a malicious thing, they can revoke it. They are the trust authority. So DigiCert here says, oh, we messed up. We're not sure we properly validated who we gave certificates to. So to make things better, we're going to take away all those certificates that were issued under this bad process and reissue new ones. Which, if you're not technical, doesn't seem like a big deal, but if you've ever had a server and had to kind of redo your certificate, which you have to do every so often anyway, it's a pain in the butt. So some customers asked for delays because they have critical infrastructure they couldn't really patch in a short period of time. And it was a short period of time this was between communication and revocation. But yeah, there, DigiCert's like, yeah, nope, no more. Now this was announced kind of on July 29th. They notified their impacted customers and said, look, in 24 hours, we're revoking these certificates. Now, if you revoke a certificate, you kind of get that bad error page. Sometimes you can work around it, but it's not a good thing. And depending on how many certificates you have that are impacted by this, it may or may not be an easy process to kind of go through and replace them. So, as I said, 29th, they gave it 24 hours. So on the 30th, they revoked them. Now, there were some that, as I said, asked for kind of a delay because they had so many servers and there was some critical infrastructure that was involved. But as of August 3rd, Saturday, at 7:30 p.m. UTC, every certificate was going to be revoked. So I'm hoping that most of you had gotten that done before this point, but if you haven't, you know, it's a bad day for you. It's just as simple as that. Especially behind the, you know, the stuff that happened with CrowdStrike 2 weeks ago. This is not adding to you having a good day. Now, how you fix this, if you were impacted, is you sign into your DigiCert account. You generate a new certificate signing request. It goes and verifies you're the owner of that domain. You have what you need to have. And it will reissue you a new brand new certificate. So it's not impossible to do. It just takes some time. And sometimes there's some fiddling you have to get on the system for it to work properly. And maybe you have to reboot the system and it's a high value system. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with this. So this is kind of similar though to some other issues. It sucks when it's you, but every certificate authority has the ability to revoke certificates, especially if they don't feel like they are done in the proper way. That's why they are a trust authority. So this is not a DigiCert standalone issue. Any certificate authority could have this. And I know I've heard the normal, well, we're just going to get rid of this DigiCert and we'll go with someone else. And it could be happen to anyone. There's a process that if for some reason they can't verify they're doing this properly, they may have to kind of pull back on their certificate. So there's a lot of practice in IT these recent weeks with CrowdStrike and now DigiCert, but you'll get through it. It's hard, but this is why we kind of do what we do. It's our jobs, especially in security, you know, making sure things are talking securely between each other. But this is where we kind of show who we are. And it sucks, and there's late nights, and there's lots of coffee, or cigarettes, or whatever your vice of choice is during stressful situations. Mine's generally pizza. But it sucks this had to get done. I would have wished they gave a better window for it, but they have to maintain their ability as a trust authority to reel things in when they need to. For our third story this week, it's one we've touched about before. It's not the first time I've talked about Cloudflare and their tunnels and how they're being used by criminals. Now, Cloudflare Tunnels is a service offered by Cloudflare, which allows you to create a secure, encrypted connection between your local server and the Cloudflare network. Now, this is ideally meant to do so that you can work on your servers without exposing them directly to the internet. It also simplifies some network configuration while you're testing to avoid firewalls or NAT setups. There's a lot of legitimate reasons for it. And why hackers like it, it's free, meaning they just create accounts all day, every day. So as I said, this is not the first time that this service, this ability to create tunnels in Cloudflare, is being abused. Sysdig uncovered a cryptojacking and a proxy jacking campaign that was dubbed LabRat, which used these Cloudflare tunnels that hide the traffic of command and control servers. But attackers, once again, have come back. And this is why I say these are why it's always important to kind of pay attention to some of these servers. Because if it's not that particular one that impacts you, an attacker will come back around to it eventually. And this is what it is. Now they're using this in conjunction with phishing emails. They're sending a phishing email to a person which contains a zip file, which, once again, bad thing. But the zip file contains a URL shortcut file. That shortcut file is hosted in the Cloudflare proxied server. So the user unzips it, clicks that file, it goes and grabs batch scripts or Python files and Python payloads, and then kind of infects your computer. Now, why it's doing that, the evil thing is it also displays a fake PDF document. Maybe what they were phishing you with, like, hey, information about this. So you see something. So it's not one of those things of the early days of internet where you double clicked on an exe file, nothing happened, and you immediately knew that you had downloaded a virus. This one does that, but also shows you a file so that you're like, well, this doesn't apply to me, or someone sent to me by mistake, and you kind of ignore it. Now, why this is dangerous for us IT and security professionals is because this traffic is going to Cloudflare, our traditional block list, our traditional maybe DNS, you know, reputation score stuff doesn't work the same because it's going to Cloudflare. Cloudflare is trusted. Your servers may reach out to Cloudflare normally. It's really hard to kind of really get this traffic down. And it's also used to kind of negate some security controls we normally would have. I can block you from going to a website, but if you go to a Cloudflare and that goes through that stuff, like I said, it bypasses firewalls or NAT setups, and it creates a tunneled connection between that server and that PC. It pretty much gives them an in to the network, which gives them a chance to do the attacks, and if things aren't working out, they pop right out and nothing. You know, it's hard for you to track stuff. Now, what makes it scary is there are a bunch of malware groups right now using this tunnel to do some evil things. Just a small list, and this is not an all-inclusive list. Async Rat, which is a remote access Trojan that allows attackers to control infected systems, steal data, spy on victims, record keystrokes, capture screenshots. GU Loader. It's a malware loader that downloads and executes additional malicious payloads. Pure Logs. It's a data stealing malware. It's designed to capture and steal sensitive information. Remcos Rat, which is a remote access Trojan, again, which gives them access to your system remotely. There's Venom Rat, which is also another remote access tool to take control of systems. And X-Worm, which is a piece of malware that functions as both a remote access tool and a worm, allowing it to spread across networks. All of these things have started to use this tunnel to bypass normal security controls that are out there. And once again, like I've always said, this is a tool that they can use that comes through very easily because it's phishing. And while we have all these tools to capture phishing, they still get through. It's still a way of having your users vet the information they're doing. And if they're busy, they may be lucky to click on stuff and just click through it. I mean, most systems I'd recommend having, like, you know, don't allow zip files through, but in most business sense, that doesn't always work out. So it's hard to kind of combat, and it goes around some of our normal tools in which to monitor the web traffic of our users, because it's not going out through the internet. It's going out through a tunnel like a VPN, except it's different. It's not a traditional VPN, so you can't even look for VPN traffic. And kind of like the last story, it's encrypted, so you can't see the data that's going from your network to the attacker's hosted provider somewhere. Now, I'm sure once they're caught, Cloudflare tries to take them down, but because it's free, they can sit there and just generate these all day, every day, which is a real scary thing for us. So the only way to really protect yourself against this kind of attack is make sure your users are pretty good at phishing, spotting phishing emails. Make sure they know what they're looking for. Make sure they reach out for help. Anything suspicious should be reported to you. Yes, it's a big pain because you get a lot of stuff that's just junk email, but this is why you take that extra step and be secure in the way you look at it, because once this is on your system, if your antivirus or your EDR or XDR or any DR doesn't detect it, yeah, by the time it runs here, you got a problem. For our final story this week, it's not as directly impacting as the rest of our stories, but I did find it interesting. This comes out from the Black Hat Middle East and Africa Conference. I know this week going on is the Black Hat in the US conference. But there was an interesting security researcher that said they had found nearly 1,000 fake LinkedIn profiles. And they were created with the aim of reaching out to companies in the Middle East with well-connected and well-lived synthetic identities, which means they're fake identities. And of course, the main goal of this is the same with every piece of thing we talk about, which is financial fraud, meaning they want something to get money out of you, or convince employees to, in specific roles, to kind of give them sensitive information. And the reason why I found this interesting is, you know, we kind of trust LinkedIn professionally, but it's not your normal social media site. I mean, you're more likely to connect to someone you may not know on LinkedIn than you would probably on a Facebook, a Twitter, a whatever the kids are using nowadays, the TikToks. But on LinkedIn, there's a level of trust. You assume it's business people doing business things. And I know I've run into a situation with this where I was working somewhere and I got a LinkedIn request from someone who also claimed to work at that same company. Now, me being me, I'm suspicious of things. So I turned to the company directory and looked this person up, and they didn't exist. There had never been anyone who did that job in that role in the location they said. And I got that because I was able to ask around internally in the company to find more information out. And if they were in the company, even if they had worked for the company in the past, I probably wouldn't have cared. But the fact that it was just so obviously a fake person kind of annoyed me. But it happens. And this is a tactic people do to gain that trust. Because, you know, most companies, not everyone's in one building. They could be in 20 buildings across the country. They could be remote work. They could be in another country. So, you know, you kind of trust what you get on LinkedIn sometimes. And the key takeaway is you shouldn't. But in this kind of speech, they were talking about that they wanted sensitive information. They wanted to commit financial fraud. But these whole bunch of LinkedIn things had some, for lack of a better term, generalities to them. They were all made kind of the same way. And this exact one, they were all women who appeared to be in their 20s. They all had Muslim names. They usually claimed to work in Southeast Asia. So they looked real, you know. And they were reaching out to people who may have had certain titles, may have been certain things in the job, to get more information out. Now, it's kind of interesting because in one case that they kind of dove into, the quote-unquote person, the synthetic ID, claimed to be head of product at a large company. From the looks of it, the account was perfect. It looked great. It looked real. Except the person indicated they worked in a tiny town outside of Riyadh that has no industry. And when they traced the profile image, it went back to a Ukrainian website. So you had to kind of peel beyond just the outside view of it to kind of get an idea of how real this person was. And I'll tell you, not everyone does that for every person who wants to connect on LinkedIn. And honestly, even me, someone who's paranoid, I don't do it for every person who wants to connect with me. Now, these kind of attacks work because most statistically, the profiles send connection requests to just a whole smattering of people. And whether you connect or not, or whether you know the person or not, or whether they're in the industry or not, that builds a level of interconnectivity. Like, well, I know Jim is a person and Jim's friends with this person, so maybe they are a real person. Maybe Jim knows them. And I've run into this. I think we all have, where you go, oh, I see you're connected with so-and-so. How do you know them? It's like, I ran into a conference, or, you know, they saw me speak and they connected there. So because they're friends with someone, or because they're linked to someone on LinkedIn, doesn't necessarily mean that they're by default trustworthy. Because most people aren't hesitant to accept new connections on LinkedIn. Now, the reason they want you to connect is twofold. One is builds their real score. And two, if you don't have your settings set right in LinkedIn, they can see your kind of who you're connected with. And they can start building a OSINT, open source intelligence, of your company. Well, he reports to him and he has a higher title than him, and starts building that thing up. So, you know, some of those attacks we've talked about in the past where they've used social engineering, go, hey, Bob told me to reach out to you. Well, Bob works in my company. I know Bob, and having him reach out to me on this topic, that makes sense. So be cautious, because this is a kind of social engineering that most people are going to fall for, but, you know, can just not be, you know, financially motivated. It may just be to get information out of you. Hey, have you heard of Project X? You link this stuff out, or they find enough information about you, they can pretend to be you to someone else in your organization. So just as always on all social media channels, just be cautious as ever, because you never know. Thanks once again, everyone, for listening to the show. I really do appreciate it. Make sure you go to our website, cybersecuritynewsbyte.com, to find all of the show notes I use for this, as well as download episodes and find out where you can subscribe to the podcast. This one, we don't have a video version, but usually we do, so you can usually get that on YouTube. And finally, you can find out more about me at jimguckin.com. Any questions, you want to talk about things, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is me@jimguckin.com. Thanks so much. Have a great day, and make sure you stay safe online.